brothers and sisters, and most respected friends. Certainly a pleasure to be with you here at this Bible school, have an opportunity to hear those truths most surely believed among us being discussed, have an opportunity for fellowship one with another. It truly is one of the privileges belonging to the believers, the brethren and sisters of Christ. Certainly, we must all be aware of the many, many privileges that we enjoy that are unique to the believers. We could go on and name many, many of those privileges, but certainly high on the list is the privilege of prayer. Now, it may strike you a little strange that we refer to prayer as a privilege, because we are told to pray without ceasing. We are commanded to pray for certain specific things. Therefore, prayer is a commandment. Certainly, we are commanded to pray. However, I think we must recognize it as one of the outstanding privileges that we enjoy as well. Can you imagine the privilege of drawing near to the Creator and Sustainer of all things and addressing Him as our Father and being assured that He will hear us and that He will respond, although that response may not always be what we would like for it to be or what we feel that it should be? Imagine also the beauty of drawing near to God in prayer. Actually communicating, actually speaking to the great and eternal first cause, the Creator and the Sustainer of all things. The uttering of an acceptable prayer is the very highest mental state that the human mind is capable of attaining unto, and the unsurpassed beauty is unsearchable, and words cannot express nor adequately describe the spirit of comfort and strength that is derived from drawing near to God in prayer and being assured, as we have indicated, that He will hear us. We have the words of James 5:16, in which he says, "The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." Truly, this is a comfort. Truly, it is a privilege that we have of drawing nigh to God in this way. Now, we have said the offering of an acceptable prayer is the very highest state that mortal man can attain unto, or mortal mind can attain unto. Now, this fact in itself would indicate to us that it does not come easy. Anything outstanding, anything that reaches to the heights above the ordinary, does not come easy. It requires effort on our part. It requires training. You know, it is beautiful what the human mind and the human body can be trained to do, whether it's the performance of an athlete, a musician, a dancer, whatever it may be. It's wonderful to see what those people can do. But can you imagine when you watch a performance and perhaps enjoy it, if it's something you're interested in, can you imagine the amount of preparation that goes into that beforehand, something you do not see? By the same token, can you imagine the effort, the training that goes into the offering of an acceptable prayer on the part of a believer? Truly, it is something that does not come easy. Now, as we begin to train ourselves to communicate with God through the medium of prayer, it becomes necessary for us to recognize our position of complete dependence upon God. You remember, we mentioned this morning, we work this into our notes a lot. Perhaps it's because I have a lot of trouble with this. But in any case, we feel that it's worthwhile to call this to your attention. And we must recognize His position of absolute and unrivaled supremacy. We must be in a position really described by Christ. In Matthew, the 12th chapter, verses 34 and 35. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. A good man, out of the good treasures of his heart, bringeth forth that which is good. But an evil man, out of the evil treasures of his heart, bringeth forth that which is evil. So we find here that the important factor that we must deal with in this matter is our hearts or our mind. Brother Paul has described this very well, how that this relates to our mental faculties, our hearts. And unless we have the right material in our hearts, in our minds, then we cannot offer a suitable prayer to God. We cannot rise to the heights necessary to communicate with God in this way. It's not possible. I'm sure each of us have our own way of approaching to God in prayer. We may perhaps close our eyes as we seek the Heavenly Father in prayer. And when we do, we have our own concept, of course, enlightened by the Word of God, of what we may see as we approach God in our mind's eye, in the eye of faith. But now, the important thing, or one of the important things is, when we do this, what do we really see in our mind's eye? Do we see the Father and Christ seated at His right hand? Or do we see the things in the office, or the things at home, or the things in some social event, something of this kind? It's very important that we are mindful of the things of the Spirit, so that we truly feel that we are drawing near to God, that we see our concept of God and of Christ seated at His right hand. Now, if we are mindful of the cares of the world, of the pleasures of the world, whatever might interest us in that direction, again, it is difficult, if not impossible, for us to draw near to God in an acceptable way and communicate with Him, to pour out our thoughts to Him, to truly ask for His guidance, for His forgiveness, for His strength and courage to help us bear our burdens, whatever they may be. Now, let us go back for a moment to the words of Christ when He said, a good man out of the good treasures of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, but an evil man out of the evil treasures of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. Now, suppose we are not able to really draw nigh unto God, and we recognize in our own minds, maybe we wouldn't admit it to each other, but in our own minds we recognize that we are not rising to the heights that we would love to raise to in this situation, and we find that we are mindful of the wrong things. Now, how are we going to correct this? Are we simply going to change the way we are seeing God, the way we are reacting to given situations? No, this is not the place to change. Where is the place to change? In our subconscious minds, our hearts, what Christ referred to as our hearts. Because our subconscious mind is the sum total of all our experiences, whether we are still conscious of those things or not. They are buried there. The human mind has been compared to a computer, and this information is stored there. Now, when we find ourselves confronted with a situation, we begin to form a reaction, and it may happen like this. It takes us a while to talk about it, but it can happen and does happen very rapidly. We begin to form a thought, a reaction there in our subconscious mind. It comes up to the semi-subconscious and then on up to the conscious mind where the action actually takes place. Now, what we are outwardly concerned with is this action that is produced. But this action is going to be determined by what's in our subconscious mind. Now, People in the field of sales motivation, those who are supposed to be able to make you a successful, loving salesman in three easy lessons, tell us that not only are we influenced by what is in our subconscious mind, but this same thing that comes up from the subconscious to the semi-subconscious to the conscious always turns and goes back down, so that what we do in turn determines what's going to be in our subconscious mind. And they tell us that the only way we can break this cycle, if it's wrong, if it's bad, if it isn't what we would like for it to be, the only way we can break it is by changing what is in our subconscious mind. That's the only way. And this is in keeping with what Christ said, because he said, a good man out of the good treasures of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, but an evil man out of the evil treasures of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. So there's no way to change the cycle of our thinking, of our reactions, of our actions, except to change what is in our hearts. And how are we going to do this? These same experts tell us to change and get the right motivation to sell, and it's the same with us working in the truth, except it's a different kind of material that we want in our hearts and minds. But they tell us the only way to do this is by constant working at it. They would like to sell us tapes that we play in a tape deck in our car on the way to work, that we listen to at work when we have chance, that we listen to before we go to bed at night, that we listen to when we get up of a morning, that we even possibly put under our pillow and listen to while we are asleep. Well, what does that remind us of, by the way? It reminds us of the words of God through Moses when he was telling them of the law. Talk about it to your children when you get up, when you lie down. Whatever you do, talk about it. And this is the only way we're going to change. And we've got to be sure, though, that we are feeding our subconscious mind the right material, because we're not going to improve ourselves if we continue to feed into our subconscious mind the wrong kind of material. And this is the only way we're going to be able to improve ourselves. Now, in further efforts to prepare ourselves for rising to those heights necessary to offer an acceptable prayer to God, there is another situation that may interfere with us. Let us go back to Matthew 6, 25 and 26. Christ speaking again. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought of your life, what ye shall eat, or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns. Yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are ye not much better than they? Now the portion of this that we are concerned about is, take no thought. Take no thought. Now, we are told that a better translation of this is, be not anxious. Be not anxious for the things of this life. And why are we concerned with this in preparing ourselves for prayer? Because a state of anxiety destroys our peace of mind and makes it very difficult, if not impossible, to draw near, to approach God in acceptable prayer, to really pour out our innermost thoughts to him. It becomes very difficult under those circumstances. So what we should do, now we aren't saying, in the King James, it makes it appear to say, don't pay any attention to it, don't be concerned at all with the things of this life. But we know this really is not the intention of Christ, or was not his intention, because it's necessary that we work, that we provide for ourselves and our families. But be not anxious about it. We should develop faith to feel that God will see us through, that what we need, those things that are actually needful for us, and we don't always know what those things are, but God knows what they are, and that he will provide them for us, because he says he feeds the fowls of the air, and he causes the flowers of the field to grow. You know, in the desert country in the southwestern and western part of the United States can be a very hostile environment. Yet in the spring of the year after nice rainy winter, the wildflowers grow beautifully. The whole desert can be just a carpet of beauty with flowers in bloom. How do those grow like that? God causes them to grow. We perhaps could not do it. If we tried to plant them and take care of them, they probably wouldn't grow at all. But under the care and the guiding hand of God, they grow and they are beautiful. And the fowls of the air are fed. And the animals, the beasts of the forest are fed. Will not God see that our needs are met? In fact, we are reminded of the words of the writer to the Hebrews in the faith chapter. He that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Now, not only must we believe that he is a rewarder of us, but that he is a provider for us as well, that he will see us through. Now, there is another situation we find ourselves confronted with very often, and it's not very far removed from a state of anxiety. However, the effects are vastly different. That is, when we are under extreme trials, when we are in trouble of one kind or another, then we find it very easy to pour out our innermost thoughts to God, to truly seek him, to close our eyes and feel that we see him and that we see his Son, Jesus Christ, seated at his right hand. And we can believe under those circumstances that he is hearing us, that he will hear us, and that he will respond. And we may be sure that he will. However, as we have indicated, that response under any circumstances may not be what we would like for it to be. However, we can rest assured that whatever way God responds is the way that is needed. That is the best way for us. It is in the times when things are going well with us that, again, we find it difficult to truly draw near to God in prayer. No doubt this is one of the reasons that he chasteneth every son whomsoever he receiveth, is because he knows that if things go too well for us, we will come to the point that we will feel that we do not need God, that we can get the things that we want and need of our own sufficiency. And of course, this is not good for us to get that feeling. We must feel the need of God for him to provide for us, for him to guide and direct us, to strengthen us, to give us those things we need. Now, in all of this, our attitude is very, very important. It cannot be one of self-righteousness, nor can we adopt the policy that we have done enough for God that he owes us the consideration of hearing our prayers. This cannot be done. We may be inclined at times, when we look about us and we see the manner in which the world is turning its back on God, that's going its own way, it's paying no attention to his commandments, his standards of right and wrong. We see the people in the world doing this, and we think about our own position. We read his word, we go to meeting, we partake of the emblems, we come to Bible school, we study, and we are inclined to, in our prayers, to point this out to God. And we're inclined to say, you ought to be proud of us, the way that we are serving you, the way we are doing your bidding. But we're not going to say that, are we? We aren't going to say that because we are readily recognize that this is the very attitude that Christ so forthrightly condemned in the parable of the scribe, or of the Pharisee and the publican, in which the time the Pharisee and his a parable pointed out to the Lord how good he was, and he was glad that he was not in the position of the publican, the tax gatherer, who was so wicked in God's sight. But Christ said that the publican went down justified rather than the Pharisee. So we aren't going to say that, are we? Because we're all familiar with that. However, I wonder if we might think that sometimes. if consciously or subconsciously, this might be our attitude, if we might be drawing or trying to draw near to God with that attitude in mind. If so, we need to get it out. We don't need to have, we must not have, this kind of attitude in mind when we endeavor to draw near to God in prayer. We must remember at all times that the communication between God and man was broken off by man through sin. And it is God who has made it possible to reopen the lines of communication in this matter between himself and man. And we must do it in strict keeping with God's revealed will. He has revealed through his word how we must approach him. We must do it in accordance with that revealed will. And along this line, we must in all things recognize and accept the will of God. It's very easy for us to take a position, again, consciously or unconsciously, of saying, this is our position now. God, we would like to have you support us in this. We know that this position is right, and we would like to have your support. This we should not do. When we approach God, what should we ask for? Specific things? Specific situations? Conditions? No. We should ask that his will be done in any given situation. That we accept his will, though again, it may not always be what we personally would choose, but we know it is for the best. Now, as we have indicated, it is very obvious that all of the above that we've been dealing with relates to our mental faculties, to our minds. Now, how are we to know if we have the proper attitude in this matter? How do we know we have not adopted a policy of complacency and self-righteousness? The only way we can know is by self-examination, by taking some time alone. Now, you cannot examine me. I cannot examine you. This must be done on an individual basis. And due to our makeup, that is, that factor, that thing in us that Jeremiah described as being deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, that causes it to be most difficult for us to objectively examine and evaluate ourselves from the standpoint of our motives. Perhaps self-examination is one of the most serious problems that brethren of Christ have, although it is not always recognized that this is the case. But when we examine ourselves from the standpoint of our motives, when we really are alone, when we are looking into our innermost thoughts and heart, mind, to try to determine what causes us to do what we do, what motivates us, we are looking at the most intimate part of our character. And we may lack the courage to admit even to ourselves that we have done wrong or that we have been motivated by the wrong thing. Now, we can do good things, we can do wonderful things, and still that not be acceptable in the sight of God. Why? What motivated us to do that? Was it a desire for self-recognition? Sometimes we are told that we may do something good because we have a guilty conscience. We feel guilty because we've done something else, so we're going to do something good to make up for it. Well, if that's what motivates us to do something good, this is not acceptable in the sight of God. Paul makes that very clear in 1 Corinthians, where he points out that we may give our bodies to be burned, we may give to the poor, and all of these things, but if we have not love or charity, agape, it profiteth us nothing. So we need to know what motivates us, what causes us to do the things that we do. Now, of course, in dealing with our mental faculties, we are dealing with the intangible thoughts, motives, the thinking of our minds, and this is always difficult. Now, for example, if we take a Bible, we look at this Bible as it is here, and if we were Bible salesmen, it wouldn't be very difficult for us to describe this, the good features of a Bible, to a prospective buyer. The cover, the binding, the paper, the printing, the aids that are in the back of it, it's very easy. But now, on the other hand, suppose you're going to talk and try to teach somebody the intangible principles that are found inside this Bible. This is much more difficult. It's much more difficult to deal with the intangible, that which you cannot see or touch or feel. These are the things that cannot be demonstrated in laboratories, these principles of which we speak. And of course, this difficulty is added to by what we've already mentioned, the deceitful mind that we are endowed with. And because of this, it's very easy for us to deceive ourselves into believing that we are much better than we really are. Now, as we have said before, it's possible for us to deceive each other. I could deceive you, I'm sure. You can deceive me. But we can, and we may even deceive ourselves. This is the dangerous part of it, but we cannot deceive God. Now, we might illustrate this point by considering a young child. Now, children, when they're very young, are very open. It's very easy to see what they're thinking, what motivates them. And very often when young children are at play, one of them, when he becomes dissatisfied with something, he'll take up the nearest thing at hand and give chase to a playmate. And this is the thing he wants to do, and he does it. And it's very obvious what causes him to do it. And he may fall down in the floor and throw a temper tantrum. And again, he's very open, and it's very apparent what his feelings are. But as he grows into adulthood, it becomes apparent to him that this kind of behavior is not acceptable in the society in which we live. So he stops doing it. But now, and many of us are in that position, aren't we? We've learned that you can't do this. You can't take up a shovel out of the sandbox and give chase to somebody. This just isn't done in this society. But now the question is, have we really overcome the impulses to do this, or have we simply driven these things under cover and keep them covered up and keep them under wraps? Now again, even in adulthood, the very sophisticated individual is much better at doing this, at covering up his or her feelings, than the rather simple individual. We learn various degrees the ways to hide, to cover up what we really feel. And this should not be done. We should get rid of those feelings. Of course, this isn't always easy, but this is part of what the fight against the flesh is all about, is overcoming the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. Now, we cannot expect to properly equip ourselves to deal with these problems in a short time. It takes time to do this, but time alone is not enough. It takes effort. It takes agonizing on our part in order to successfully overcome these fleshly impulses that we have. But this accomplishment should be progressive as we go through life during the time of our probation. Now, these things, of course, are not directly concerned with prayer, with offering an acceptable prayer. However, they certainly are stepping stones that lead toward the blessing of offering an acceptable prayer. Without these things of which we speak, we cannot do it. Now, it might be well for us to offer a word of explanation. We do not mean to leave the impression that we have to accomplish these things in the ultimate before we can offer one single acceptable prayer to God. This isn't what we mean. However, what we do mean is that we need to continually improve ourselves. We need to continually grow in these things and grow toward, and we'll never reach the point where we can offer a perfectly acceptable prayer to God, but we should be working toward that, and we should be growing in that direction, because if we don't, we will not long remain in a spiritually healthy condition, and we'll find ourselves sliding back the other way. In this spiritual race for salvation, we are going to be on the move, either forward or backward. We are not going to stand still, not for very long. Now, we have talked a great deal about our attitude in this matter, and it's extremely important. We don't want to take away from that in any way whatsoever. However, we would like to point out to you that this is not the only thing that is important in this matter. A proper attitude must be accomplished, or must be accompanied, rather, by the proper knowledge of God's requirements, what He expects of us, the way He wants us to approach Him. And this we do not develop within ourselves, within our heart, within our mind. This we learn from God's Word. He has revealed it to us, and that's the only source, so that we can be properly informed as to His requirements. Now, there are many places in the Bible that we can find God's requirements revealed concerning the offering of prayer. But the one in particularly that we have in mind is found in Leviticus chapter 16. Leviticus 16, verses 11 through 13. Now, this, of course, concerns the law of Moses as it was being given by God to Moses, and this concerns the offering of incense. And Aaron shall bring the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and shall make an atonement for himself and for his house, and shall kill the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself. And he shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from off the altar before the Lord, and his hands full of sweet incense, beaten small, and bring it within the veil. And he shall put the incense upon the fire before the Lord, and the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat, that is upon the testimony, that he, Aaron, die not. All right, if we go to the 8th chapter of Revelation, we don't need to turn there, I don't believe, but we find that incense is associated with prayer, the offering of prayer. So we see the incense here to be offered with the sacrifice under the law of Moses was symbolic of prayer, the offering of prayer. And it is said here that this must be done that the priest die not. This tells us that for a prayerless man, there is no mercy. If we cannot find it within ourselves to successfully pray to God, there is no mercy for us. Now, this incense that was offered was of a divinely specified kind. This tells us that prayer must be in harmony with God's revealed will. And from Christ's admonition in this matter, we learn that prayer need not be long and complicated and comprised of unusual sentences or phrases. But for an example, the Lord's Prayer is simplicity itself, yet it contains a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. Now, another thing, when we are analyzing the Lord's Prayer, we find that there is no provision in it for the glorification of the flesh, for self-glorification, for seeking things to satisfy the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. But as far as these things are concerned, Christ simply says, "Give us this day our daily bread." Now, we believe that this would include both our spiritual needs and our temporal needs in this matter, because we're told that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from God. So this asking for our daily bread, we believe, includes our spiritual needs and our spiritual blessings, as well as our physical, our temporal blessings. Now, another qualification here was that this incense was to be beaten small. This tells us, we believe, that prayer should be offered often, not once a week in big chunks, but often. We are told that man ought always to pray and not faint. Pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks. But be thou in the fear of the Lord all the day. This should be our attitude. We should have a prayerful attitude at all times. This incense was to be vaporized by fire taken from the altar. Now, in the law of Moses, the altar was a type of Christ. So this tells us that our prayer should be offered in the name of Christ, but vaporized by fire taken from the altar, the fire being a symbolic of his sufferings. So prayer offered in the name of Christ, remember his sufferings. Remembering the supreme sacrifice that he made on our behalf. We are not at this time in a position to approach directly to God in prayer, but we must offer our prayer in the name of Christ, through Christ, because we have the words in 2 Timothy 2:5, there is one God and one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus. So our prayers must go through Christ, remembering his sufferings. So once we have properly prepared ourselves and we are able to properly coordinate all of these things that we have been discussing and others that may come to your mind, they very well could. And when we get all these factors properly coordinated, we are able to ascend, mentally of course, far above the undesirable things of the flesh and to reach that higher and more noble plane which enables us to stand, as it were, in the very presence of God. And as we advance and become more mature in the truth, the higher spiritual plane we are able to reach. And so we are ever drawn nearer and nearer to God in all this matter. And finally, we have the very comforting words of Peter that the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. Thank you.